Good morning, friends. We continue with our work in the Rays and the Initiations webinar commentary focused on part two of that great book, which I trust will be a book making its transition into the third installment that Master DK is due to present after 2025. Whether that includes 2025 or not, we don't know, but after 2025, it must be a pivotal point. It's certainly a pivotal point for the preparation of the spiritual hierarchy of our planet in terms of its externalization. The plans will, in all probability, be laid at that point for the first stages of the true externalization of the hierarchy. So we have been working here on page 359 of the book, and we are talking about the parallel between the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos and planetary logos and the dense physical vehicle of man, and how neither one of those is actually considered to be a principle or principled. The first principles for man really begin in his etheric body. The etheric body itself is sometimes considered a principle, and so is prana. It depends on how we look at that, and I've discussed that. It's around page 260 of Cosmic Fire, and I've discussed that in my Cosmic Fire commentaries, which are written instead of spoken. So, some idea, I think, can be gathered from studying that section about the different ways of looking at the principles, the major energies and forces which are activating the second solar system here, and which are expressed in the second solar system as major aspects of its foremost source, and that is the monadic nature of the solar logos. Always the monad is behind whatever happens. It represents itself in different ways. It represents itself as the personality. It represents itself as the soul. It represents itself as the spiritual triad. But basically, it is always the monad in extension or the monad in attenuation. It's not the full resources of the monad that we are speaking of, as they would be found and expressed upon the monadic plane itself. Neither the human being nor our solar logos is at that point where it is fully its own monad in expression. Our solar logos is not yet a sacred solar logos and has not yet taken its own cosmic third initiation. But the time for that will come, just as it will come for the human being, and it's at that point that the monad makes its presence truly felt and is registered consciously. Before that, it's simply felt as a kind of presence, but it is not a conscious registration of the nature and quality of the monad. So, again, the parallel holds true for the average disciple who has not yet taken the third degree, and for the solar logos, who is maybe, in a way, on that cosmic level, an average solar logos who is not yet a sacred solar logos. Okay, the three lower planes, let's see, wait a second here, I think I better get my bracket. The three lower planes of our seven planes are, from the angle of the esotericist, the equally unprincipled, dense cosmic substance, all 21 of them. The mark or indication of the true initiate, not just the initiate, probationary initiate, but the true initiate, when that word true is used, it's always a qualifier or a discriminator. It's asking us to use the noun carefully. The mark or indication of the true initiate is the transfer of his life and his point of identification from unprincipled substance and substantial forms to principled substance and etheric forms. This is a very important statement, actually, and it has its microcosmic meaning and its macrocosmic meaning. As long as we are somehow involved in our lower 18 subplanes as a human being and identifying therein, even when we are identifying as the with the higher three subplanes of the mental plane, we are not, in the sense being discussed here, the true initiate, unless somehow we think that the planetary logos is expressing etherically also through the three higher subplanes of the mental plane. I discussed this whole idea of the contrast between the solar logos and planetary logos in terms of the planes on which they are expressing. From one point of view, we might even think that the higher four levels of our systemic mental plane could be considered etheric in relation to our planetary logos, but certainly not in relation to our solar logos. So the mark or identification of the true initiate is the transfer of his life and point of identification, what he thinks he is, what he takes himself to be, from unprincipled substance, which is substance relating to the previous solar system, and substantial forms, to principle substance and etheric forms. Here the word substantial is used in relation to systemic, etheric, astral, and lower mental forms as the human being experiences them. Maybe even in relation to the forms found on the higher mental plane. So that truly principled substance will be found in the cosmic ethers for the fourth degree initiate. But of course, the third degree initiate who works within the higher three subplanes of the mental plane is considered, in fact, an initiate. The tendency of occult students to think ever in terms of spiritual abstraction can, and often does, militate against a grasp of the truth and presents a false picture to the intelligence. The facts that I have just emphasized have much to do with the nature of the higher initiations, which, you know, are certainly cosmic, etheric in nature. And I would ask you to remember this, he says. So all of the human initiations are taken within the causal body, but it does not indicate, in the case of the first two initiations of probation, the ability to focus within the causal body. The third initiation does give that ability. But then, you know, I suppose a man at that point is an initiate, but you kind of wonder whether he is the true initiate until he can focus in the on the Buddhic plane and find that as his major place of identification. Now, if we take this even higher, we can talk about the cosmic initiations of the planetary and solar logos, and you begin to wonder, they have not yet taken their third cosmic initiation, either one of them. And are they true initiates when they can focus on the cosmic Buddhic plane and have experienced their crucifixion? Neither one of those events has occurred. Not even for the solar logos, he's not even an initiate of the third degree cosmically considered. Those are just words for us, of course. And the planetary logos is not yet a probationary initiate of the second degree. You can check out page 384 of Cosmic Fire for more that is related to those subjects. Okay. So anyway, these planetary logos and solar logos also have a dense physical vehicle, Well, the solo logos, the 21 lower subplanes, or our three lowest systemic planes, and for the planetary logos, well, at least we can put it this way, certainly the 18 lower subplanes, and thus, in a way, 2.5 of the systemic, lowest systemic planes. The question of what to do with the higher mental plane remains open for discussion in relation to the planetary logos. The third initiation, therefore, releases the initiate from the planes of unprincipled substance, the lower subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. Well, okay, so this is considered in a planetary sense, and we are speaking of the 18 lower subplanes. And we are gathering here that unprincipled substance does not relate to the higher three mental subplanes, at least in terms of the planetary logos, at least in terms of how this is being presented. The third initiation, therefore, releases the initiate from the planes of unprincipled substance, the lower subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, whilst the next two initiations make it possible for him to work with intelligence and love on the two lowest levels of the cosmic etheric plane, working with intelligence and love. Okay. On the two lowest planes of the cosmic ethers, the buddhic and the atmic, the planes of spiritual love and intelligent will. Notice how the word intelligence and the word will are combined in relation to the atmic plane, which is the third subplane of the cosmic ethers, and thus relates, as the number three does, to intelligence, and is the first subplane of the Brahmic planes, and thus relates to will. So we can say that the fourth degree initiate works on the buddhic plane with intelligence and love, and the fifth degree initiate works on the atmic plane and the buddhic, with intelligence and love. You know, one wants to ponder these sentences over and over. People like you and I are not yet released from the planes of unprincipled substance, especially from the perspective of the solo logos, which counts all 21 lowest subplanes as unprincipled. So at the fourth degree, we will certainly be released into the cosmic ethers. At the third degree, we experience more and more of what the cosmic ethers have to bring, have to express, their nature, but we are not released into them. The true master, well, let's see, the arhat, see, that of the arhat and the master, the next two initiations, that of the arhat and the master, make it possible for him to work with intelligence and love on the two lower levels of the cosmic etheric plane, that is the buddhic and the atmic, planes of spiritual love and intelligent will. It's also, we remember, the buddhic plane is also the plane of intuition and pure reason, and was being discriminated from the true plane of love, which was the monadic plane. And this we discussed, I think, in our last program, how they are related but different, the fourth and the second cosmic ethers. The way of the higher evolution leads through the monadic and logoic planes, the highest two levels of the cosmic physical plane, where the four leads through them. Okay. When the four planes of the cosmic ethers are completely mastered and under occult direction, the initiate is, and this is very important because we cannot imagine that though we begin treading the way of higher evolution at the sixth degree, that we are at that point released to travel. Well, is that the word? Travel journey? Travel onto the cosmic astral plane and beyond. So there are preliminary stages of the way of higher evolution which still keep us confined to the cosmic physical plane and demand our mastery of the monadic plane and the logoic plane. So, you know, sometimes we just speak of the way of higher evolution and we speak of it as if, well, you're outward bound and from that time on you have little to do with the cosmic physical plane or even with our solar system for some. But there are preliminary stages where of work within our solar system and on the higher the higher cosmic ethers, and even on planets still within our solar system as part of the preparation. So we cannot overlook those preliminary stages. The way of the higher evolution leads through the monadic and logoic planes, the two highest levels of our cosmic physical plane, the logoic plane, whereon the Christ and Buddha are focused at this time. When the four planes of the cosmic etheric plane are completely mastered, you see, that's really a great demand, and are under occult direction, and presumably of the will, then the initiate is faced with the seven paths, most of which lead away from our solar system, eventually, and with the choice to tread one or other of them. Now, you know, we cannot say that the sixth degree initiate has mastered the monadic plane, and certainly not the logoic. Mastery demands, in a way, moving beyond the particular plane which one masters, or at least having contact with a higher plane than the one one is mastering. For instance, analogously, if we want to master the lower mental plane, excuse me, we have to be in contact with the energies of the higher mental plane, which assist in that mastery. So the sixth degree initiate is just really beginning to focus on the monadic plane, as if it is his major point of tension, and the seventh degree initiate on the logoic plane, as if it is his major point of tension. But though there is fresh experience there, how does it go? Experiment, experience, and expression. Though there is fresh experience there, there is not yet mastery until, I suppose, there can be some degree of contact with the cosmic astral plane in the case of the seventh degree initiate, and with the logoic plane in the case of the sixth degree initiate. His choice is naturally dependent upon ray determinations and past activity. We want to say, though not exclusively, because these paths are not definitively ray paths, as DK says. He's told us that certain monadic types tend to tread these paths. For instance, a lot of what he calls fifth ray monads, or even calls them fifth ray people, fifth ray monads is fifth ray people, tend to tread the second path of magnetic work, but it does not seem, and the ray path, let's say, is trodden by very many first and second ray monads, but of course all of them have to tread the ray path, otherwise they could not develop into, well, literally rays of a certain nature. I think the Christ, in a way, is a ray of cosmic love. He is developing that. He is on the ray path, we are told, at least for a time, even though eventually the path to Sirius may claim his attention. And that's so interesting because, you know, in a way, a higher path, path number 5, can be the point of transfer onto an apparently lower path, path number 4. But maybe we should not stratify or hierarchicalize these paths. The Buddha, we are told, was to have trodden the path to Sirius, but now other opportunities will claim his attention, and we don't know exactly what they will be. So it seems to me that there's a choice made at the sixth degree, but before one really treads the paths out of the solar system, one has to master the monadic and logoic planes. And I want to say, this is my hypothesis. Oh, where am I? Oh, not there. All right, I don't want that. So this is a hypothesis. The mastering of the sixth, and well, let's call them by their name, monadic plane and logoic plane, may take place on other planets. Such we know that Venus and Jupiter are both transition points for those who are destined to take literally paths leading to the stars. But there are planetary transition points, and of course Venus and Jupiter are still within the solar system, and there's work to be done by the outgoing initiate within this solar system. And maybe those transition points, and probably there are others, are places where the monads destined along certain paths, path number 3 in the case of Jupiter, and maybe path number 4 in the case of Venus, hypothesis, where they master the monadic and logoic planes. You know, a master of the wisdom is said to be only a master in the of the three lower worlds. So even though he's working on the Buddhic and the Atmic plane, he has not mastered them yet. And a Chohan of the 6th and 7th degree, okay, he's working on the 6th and 7th planes. You know, the Chohan of the 6th on the monadic plane, Chohan of the 7th on the logoic plane. But then analogously to the case with the master, have they mastered the 6th and 7th planes? Maybe not. I think we always master that which is below the point of focus which we presently have. And that's, you know, a bit like the statement that no problem can be solved from its own level. So his choice is naturally dependent upon ray determinations, not exclusively so, and past activity. Well, we might call this perhaps monadic descent. How, you know, in other words, how did you descend? Is, and we might say, is your way of ascent going to be the same as your way of descent? And there are hints that that may be the case. I wonder if he's talking about past activity as a monad or past activity as a human being in the lower three worlds. Anyway, the rays figure into it, but later I think he will tell us that they are not the exclusive determinants, and a man really does have the free choice. Yeah, and he's saying that right here. But is nevertheless a free choice, because all limitation has been removed, all wrong identification with physical forms is now impossible. And the initiate's only limitation is imposed by entrance into cosmic levels of awareness with which he is still unfamiliar. Well, maybe once the descending monad, that descending point from the universal logos, was familiar with those higher levels, but was not working upon them as he works upon them now, as he is a monad in retraction to the original point of descent. And what was that? You know, we can say, well, the monad is our point of descent, but the point from which what we call we have descended, but the monad did not come out of nothing. All is emanation. The dynamics of the universe are based upon emanation. So from whence did this monad encapsulated on the monadic plane descend? From whence? We certainly have to have been alive, shall we say, from the very moment the universe was created. I mean, we are life itself. So what was our identity at those points? Yes, well, I've dealt with this hypothetically in the Infinitization book. I can't say that it's correct, but I have talked about the origin of our identity as we moved from the realization of wholeness as the universal logos into more and more specialized emanations. There has been a reduction of the scope of identity in our emanative descent. Okay. His choice is naturally dependent upon raid determinations and past activity, but is nevertheless a free choice. And that's, well, the Buddha made a free choice, did he not? It was apparently not the choice he should have made, and that's astonishing. But excess of compassion held him on the path of earth service, and apparently, well, if it's not a choice he should have made, then Sanat Kumara would not have, so to speak, tapped him for that task. And yet he was free, because of immense compassion, to make that choice. All limitation has been removed. Well, all limitation of what nature? All limitation with respect to the lower five planes, I suspect, because I don't think there's yet been mastery of the six and seven planes, cosmic subplanes, that is. And all wrong identification with physical forms, including the causal body, and maybe, you know, well, all wrong identification with physical forms, and maybe even wrong identification with triadal forms, because the spiritual triad is still in the realm of the sub-monadic levels. And so they are still in the Brahmic realm of form, still in the Brahmic realm of form. Of course, the master has much to do still on the Buddhic and Atmic planes, so probably he realizes he is not the forms that may there be found. That which must definitely be accomplished is that none of the forms related to the dense physical vehicle of the solar logos can capture his sense of identification. He knows he is not those denser forms. So all that is now impossible, and the initiates, and notice he's still calling him an initiate of very high degree, the initiate's only limitation is imposed by entrance into cosmic levels of awareness with which he is still unfamiliar and generally beginning with the cosmic astral plane. So, and going on, of course, he is more and more familiar with the types of energy forms which are to be found on the cosmic physical plane because of his high focus, at least on the monadic plane and then on the logoic plane. So he's familiar with those great geometrical archetypal forms which are there to be found. Bear, therefore, continually in mind that the highest spiritual attainment upon and within the seven planes of our recognized planetary life is entirely conditioned by the fact that they are the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane and are composed of the three dense physical planes, or the our three worlds of human evolution. Is that what it says? The three, from the cosmic perspective, the three dense physical planes, just the way we have solid, liquid, and gas when speaking of systemic density, not of cosmic density. Cosmic density is etheric, physical, astral, and mental. And you know the correspondences. Okay. They are the seven subplanes of the cosmic physical plane and composed of the three dense physical planes, our three worlds of human evolution, and the four cosmic etheric planes, the four levels of so-called spiritual development. And, you know, it's in a way, spiritual development doesn't really begin until this point. The spiritual triad is the spiritual triad. And it is there that true spiritual development begins. And before that point, well, maybe we are not justified in calling it spiritual development, although we often do. So these are conditioned by three forces and four energies, these seven cosmic subplanes. I have emphasized this by constant repetition on account of the great importance of the recognition of these facts, on account of the great importance the recognition of these facts will play in any grasp you may achieve anent the way of higher evolution. So, you know, he does want us to grasp something of this so that the true destiny of the human being may be appreciated in a way that is non-glamorous and not filled with illusion. If you look at what so many human beings think of as their destiny, well, it's either to die and be gone forever, to rot in the earth, as it were, or to go to some very limited, materially reflecting heaven, paradise. You know, everything that we conceive for ourselves, normal people anyway, people who have not studied these matters, is taking place within the dense physical body of the planetary logos or of the solar logos. We conceive of material heavens or no continuance whatsoever. And the big question is there survival and all of that kind of thing? And is there a soul? And does it survive if there is a soul? You know, the average human being is dealing with fairly low-level considerations, and the great light of the ageless wisdom has not shone upon those deliberations. So the results of them are going to be filled with error, and the sense of our future, the sense of our destiny as normally conceived, is just not accurate, nor is it very interesting. And it's just filled with limitation. The limitation of complete annihilation, as if you never were, or the limitation of some very material heaven in which you're sort of walking around with a resurrected body, very much like the body that you have, though, you know, probably improved in its energy nature forever. Forgetting, of course, that the Earth will be destroyed and the solar system will be destroyed and the whole universe itself will go into Pralaya. But somehow forever, that's where you, a very limited you, will be living out the rest of eternity. So, as Madame Blavatsky might say, it's sort of the result of unphilosophic or non-philosophic religious thinking. After the master has taken the fifth initiation, he has, as you know, covered and mastered. You know, there's nothing in the lower three worlds that he's not familiar with. Covered and mastered the ordinary field of evolution for humanity. And that means the three worlds of ordinary human experience and the two worlds of superhuman effort, making the five fields of spiritual activity of man. Now, here's the question. Has the master really mastered the higher two? Somewhere, DK tells us that the master's mastery is only of the lower three, and I assume this relates to the higher mental plane as well. So it depends on the section we're reading, but though the master is definitely intelligently, lovingly active on the Buddhic and Atmic plane, the question of whether he has covered all possible experience there or has mastered every possibility there remains in question and has to be compared with other statements the Tibetan has made. Love and intelligence are now perfectly developed in him, though their expression and emphasis may vary according to his race. And note that the will is not mentioned. That is more the curriculum that begins with, or at least is initially consummated during Chohanship. He is aware of the fact of the will, or of the first divine aspect, with its two qualities, veiling a third, of destruction and of purpose. Okay, well, he's not telling us what this third aspect is. Different aspects of the will are sometimes presented as the will to be, the will to good, and the will to create. Or the will to creativity is one, the will to fulfillment, and the will which conquers death. So there's more complexity in this question of studying the will and how to enumerate the various aspects of the will. It all depends on the context with which we are dealing. So that is the subject in itself and has to be laid out clearly. So he is aware of the fact of the will, or of the first divine aspect with its two qualities, veiling a third, destruction and of purpose. I wonder if sustenance is a quality. I'm going to just kind of, in other words, the, I wonder, okay. So, is a sustainment a quality of the will, you know, that which preserves and sustains. Okay. He is becoming active on the second plane of our planetary life, the monadic plane, and that great center of life, Shambhala, is having a definite vibratory effect upon him. So the master is also engaged to a certain extent in monadic activity. The master is engaged in monadic activity, and responsiveness, and responsiveness to that level or that dimension of planetary life. Okay, so the Shambhala is having a definite vibratory effect upon him. When we think about Shambhala, we can think of four different levels of it, and especially the higher two, the logoic and monadic levels. Also, and this will be incomprehensible to you, he is becoming sensitive to a range of energies and influences which can now be registered by him, owing to his increasing monadic polarization and his contact with Shambhala. Well, the law of assembly is active in Shambhala and many solar systemic energies enter Shambhala and some cosmic energies which cannot be accessed before focusing therein. But it's simply increasing monadic polarization. It's not yet achieved monadic polarization. Not yet achieved. Only as a sixth degree initiate is that achievement possible. But we are now basically talking about the master who has taken the fifth initiation, and he's making, in a way, application to that dimension, which is monadic and shambolic. It seems to imply that the monad is a, what can we call it, a member of Shambhala. And exactly what that means, well, certainly the monad is an aspect of the divine will of Shambhala and has a little fragment of that overall will for which it is responsible and which it is seeking to enact on its great journey, and especially on the later parts of that journey when there is conscious, when its instrument is becoming conscious of the source. So the cosmic astral plane becomes, for the master, a definite objective. But remember here, Master DK has said he has not journeyed, didn't use that word, but I'll use it, journeyed there. He has not been there. Has not been there. So he says he does not know. I know not. I have not been there. But nevertheless, an objective, just the way for us the higher mental plane is an objective, the world of the soul, to focus consciously in the vehicle of the soul, the causal body, and to focus via the antichoronic consciously within the spiritual triad. These are objectives for us, just as there are higher objectives for the master. Always, for any being in the universe, there are objectives, and one can even say that for the Universal Logos, having completed his self-assigned algorithm, his or assigned algorithm, having completed that, his objective is the is merging again into absoluteness. At least it seems so to me. So he is beginning to develop a great sensitivity to that level of awareness. So interestingly, to this higher love, even to the cosmic astral plane and its higher love. And already the Christ has a great sensitivity to the cosmic astral plane and that level of love. He is a representative of it, and he has had that cosmic touch and can bring it to us, to the lives on the cosmic physical plane, especially in relation to our planet and our chain. But consciousness of that within the planetary life, as he knows it, prevents him from registering this energy of pure cosmic love as he later will, and maybe we want to say after the ninth initiation, when he refuses contact, and therefore contact with, and therefore consciousness of the cosmic physical plane. So this is an important point. The master is already beginning to have a sensitive awareness, though it is a much attenuated awareness, but it's sensitive to cosmic love. But because he is so conscious still of the cosmic physical plane, that type of lower consciousness, much higher, very high for us, but lower relatively, prevents him from registering this energy of pure cosmic love as he later will. He is registering it somewhat, but not as he later will. Okay. In this sense, it is this sense of limitation which is the cause of his recognition of the door on the way of the higher evolution. For the fifth and sixth initiations liberate him into atmic and monadic states of consciousness, respectively. And this is such a... Sometimes we hear that the master works on the Buddhic plane, but more definitely, his fifth initiation is related to the fifth systemic plane, counting from below, and his sixth initiation to the sixth, counting from below. And that is the respectively the atmic and monadic planes. So he senses that he is limited, and he is to be liberated eventually into higher states of awareness. And he can begin to sense these higher states of awareness, let's just say, from the monadic, from the atmic, and that's at one moment, I don't want that. Atmic plane, ATP, from the atmic plane onwards, this sense of what lies beyond on the way of higher evolution is sensed. So, he has this sense of limitation and a kind of intuition, kind of impression of what lies beyond him on this path which leads to the stars, as it were. And these initiations are to the initiate at this stage of development what the first and second initiations are to the disciple who is seeking to tread the earlier stages of the path of initiation. In other words, the fifth initiation and the sixth initiation are probationary cosmic initiations. Just as we have a probationary, planetary initiations, which are probationary to the solar type of initiation, but as planetary initiations do continue anyway, in other words, the third initiation is the third planetary initiation and the first solar initiation, so we still continue to use the word planetary initiation even at the third and the fourth and the fifth. So this is these are probationary initiations. Mastership and Chohanship are probationary levels to the place where the Christ stands as a transfigured solar initiate. The Christ is a transfigured solar initiate. And the fifth initiation and the sixth initiation were preliminary and probationary to the level at which he now stands. Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I think I have to. Maybe we should call this a little differently. The Christ is a transfigured Syrian initiate and a master of the solar scheme. Well, is it proper to call it that? Solar range of initiations. That's a little more accurate. So the fifth initiation and the sixth initiation were really probationary in a Syrian sense. Probationary in a Syrian sense to the level at which he now stands. In other words, a seventh degree initiate is a master. Yeah, and then of course that could continue. He's a master in terms of solar initiations. Then you begin to wonder, is the ninth degree initiate now a master in the Syrian sense of initiations? As the entered apprentice or the first degree initiation in the Syrian range of initiations begins at mastership. So count ahead five. And you get mastership, the equivalent to our normal mastership, occurring at the ninth initiation in the Syrian sense. Anyway, the fifth and sixth initiations are at this stage, are to initiate at this stage of development what the first and second initiations are. So in some sense, in the range of initiations here being discussed, the seventh initiation is the first real initiation, just as the transfiguration initiation is the first real initiation for man. So we have the three, the five, and the seven as first initiation, first real initiations. The first for man, in other words, the third initiation, transfiguration, is the first realization for man. In the solar sense, the fifth initiation is the first real initiation in the range of solar initiations. It's a great initiation of revelation. And in terms of the range of Syrian initiations, the seventh initiation is the first real initiation in the Syrian sense. That is, if the analogy holds. Okay. They might therefore be regarded as initiations of the threshold, probationary initiations. One leading to awareness of the higher levels of conscious unfoldment, which the third initiation, the first major initiation, inaugurates, and the other to those levels of expression, impression, of contact, and of further ascension, which are the sevenfold goal set before the master when the sixth initiation, the true ascension, is consummated. Well, he is he's used that word, and we didn't know what was coming at the end of the sentence, but he's talking of the sixth initiation, and therefore he talks about future ascension. It is for this reason that this particular initiation is called the initiation of decision. We will say it leads to further ascension along the way of higher evolution. So anyway, the fifth and sixth initiation, these are, you know, obviously we're thinking in higher terms than we usually think. So these might be regarded as initiations of the threshold, one leading, that is the fifth, one, let's call it, get it straight, fifth initiation, leading to the awareness of the higher levels of conscious unfoldment, which the third initiation, the first solar initiation, the first major initiation, inaugurates. So it's kind of like a third initiation in the solar range of initiations. So the fifth initiation leading to awareness of the higher levels of consciousness, which were maybe intuited or sensed at the third, and the other to those levels of impression. We might say, well, that's a good definition, isn't it? Levels of impression. I'm going to say here a dimension is a level of impression. The other leading to those levels of impression of contact and of future ascension as a monad, by the way, as a monad, which are the sevenfold goal set before the master when the sixth initiation is consummated. At the sixth initiation, he is still called a master, even though he is also a Chohan. And it is for this reason that this particular initiation is called the initiation of decision, because, you know, one of those seven goals must captivate his interest, capture his interest. One of those seven goals must become his chosen direction. We can't make a whole lot of progress in a real fast way with material like this because it's so deep. The master then chooses which of the seven ways or paths he will follow, because his aeonial experience has enabled him to choose any of them and know what he has chosen aright. Has enabled him aeonial experience, maybe we can call it the great pilgrimage into the lower five subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, has enabled him to choose any of them and know that he has chosen aright. Well, okay, let's just say he will choose one. But the one he chooses will be the correct one. In other words, he knows how to choose correctly based upon his aeonial experience. And maybe that word, aeonial. It's a great word, and I think it should be added to the dictionary. Okay. Though these seven paths, being one of the septenates, are necessarily related to the seven rays, and here's where he says it, they are not ray paths. And that's what I was discussing a little earlier, even though they have some ray determinations in relation to them. How did he say that? Let's see if I can go back here. His choice is naturally dependent upon ray determinations. But I amplified that idea because I, in a sense, knew that this other statement was coming. And this statement is, though these seven paths bring one of the septenates, being one of the septenates are necessarily related to the seventh rays, they are not ray paths, nor are they governed by the seven rays, as different types, different ray types, do choose the same path. Any one of them is open to the master of the wisdom, and his choice will not be dependent, or I want to say at least completely dependent, upon his ray type, though he will take that factor into consideration. Okay, so there's more to this great choice than simply the ray of the monad or the higher ray of the monad, let us say. I am contending or hypothesizing that there are two rays to the monad, a major and a minor monadic ray. Okay, they are more definitely related to the seven cosmic planes than to the seven rays. This we will consider in greater detail when dealing with the factor of the seven ashrams, which are proving grounds for the masters when confronted with the initiation of decision. Proving grounds, in other words, wherein our abilities are expressed and further developed. All right, well, this is, this is deep material, friends. So let us say that this is the end of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Program 11, and we were moving from page 356, I believe, to, was it 359? That was it. To 361. We didn't cover very much there, but it was so deep. And beginning of Rays and Initiation Webinar Commentary Part 2, Program 12, 362. And I seem to have erased this. 359 to 361. Okay. Well, you know, it's beyond us, literally beyond us. But what we learn about these higher possibilities will influence what we do when attempting to achieve what lies immediately before us. The great scope, the great perspective does affect our present efforts. So we will see you for program number 12, continuing in this very deep material on the ways, or the way of the higher evolution, the sevenfold way of the higher evolution, and ninefold at the moment. See you then.